Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Welcome to Close Up Radio, everybody. It's a pleasure to have you with us today. I hope everybody is doing well, and I hope you're having a good day. If you're not, well, we are certainly going to inspire you, as we always do here on Close Up Radio and television. And we do that through these 30-minute conversations that we have on our broadcast, and also television video interviews that we do with our guests as well. This is our radio side of what we've been doing for well over 20 years on Close Up Radio. And if this is your first time sampling us, we thank you again very much for making us a part of your day. This episode is live right now, but will also be recorded simultaneously. So you can hear it again. You can share the links with anybody that you think would get great value from this particular episode. As I welcome in just a second our very special guest, psychotherapist Dr. Catherine Milner. She's live and direct from St. Louis, Missouri, and Dr. Milner has over 25 years of experience as a psychotherapist here in the United States, specializing in couples, family, and child therapy. Her work is focused on anyone from ages 3 to 103, and in her work, she does not assume the role of expert in others' lives, but acknowledges each individual as the expert in their own life. In the most non-judgmental way possible, Dr. Milner's plight is to respect each individual's unique subjective experience. And Dr. Milner believes that the source of meaning is not in me nor in you. It is in the interaction between the two of us. Implicit in this flowing connection and exchange between people is the importance of valuing other people's individual ways of making sense of their world. And Dr. Milner replaces the word problems with puzzles to be solved. I love that. She says that everyone has problems, but the people who come to her are often using the same solutions over and over again, and these solutions have become a puzzle because they're not solving anything. By working creatively together, it becomes apparent that there are an infinite number of solutions available. And if one solution does not work, well, there's always another one that can be tried. This promise of opening the door to feeling of hope lies in the introduction of accepting that multiple possibilities can exist. Dr. Milner's true mission is to create a safe, holding environment where an individual can feel connected and sense trust. Her website is CatherineMilner.com, and that's Catherine with a C, and Milner is M-I-L-N-E-R. We'll mention that again during the course of the show, but it is my pleasure and honor to welcome here exclusively on Close Up Radio, renowned psychotherapist, Dr. Catherine Milner. Dr. Milner, thank you very much for joining us here as our guest today on the program. It's a pleasure to have you with us, and welcome.
Wow, thanks. Most of us love talking about ourselves and you know, what is deeply meaningful to us. And most of us like to be the focus of attention. So I thank you very, very much for that opportunity, Jim.
Ah, the pleasure is all ours, Doctor. I'm very fascinated by some of your own journey, some of your own inspirations and aha moments that really pointed you in the direction of and led you to become a psychotherapist. What was it about psychotherapy specifically? And maybe you can share a little of the background leading up to it as well, but what were some of those inspirations on your own life's journey, Doctor, that really pointed you in the direction of wanting to do this work as a psychotherapist?
Well, I was actually born in a mental hospital. And that led me to a keen interest in mental health. It was way back in the 40s when the mental institutions were terribly sad and very derelict places where humans were completely dehumanized, and it was actually a life sentence. My dad was a psychiatrist, and he would occasionally mention and give us, you know, sort of gently tell us that no one was going to be able to, in the hospital, was going to be able to go back into the world. That was before all the psychotropic meds. So I actually had the opportunity from very young to watch the development of mental health over the years. And it did take a quantum leap when psychotropic meds became available in the 50s. What that did was it brought families back into the treatment team, and people were able to start going home, which was incredible. And then that gave the birth to a blossoming of paramedical courses like occupational therapy, social work. In the hospital I was in with my family, where we lived in the grounds, there was an introduction of tuck shops and hairdressing salons and secondhand clothing stores where patients could actually become humanized again by, you know, having a real world out there. And then there were picnics for families organized and pageants where the patients put on performances. So there was that reconnection, which was a complete change to the face of the mental hospital I was in. And so patients were able then to start being discharged, which was a big and wonderful development in mental health. So I started studying psychology in the 60s at a British university. And the psychology field, I liked that more than the psychiatry field. My dad had 5 kids. He wanted us all to be doctors. But I felt psychiatry was, they weren't trained as much to listen. And I'm not, you know, I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying I like the idea of a training, being able to listen, to give more time to individuals. And so that's kind of the why I chose psychology all those years ago.
That's wonderful. Tell us about the work that you do and, you know, the joy that it brings, obviously, for you and some of the incredible experiences that happen for your clients. I know creating a safe zone, creating trust between you and the client and you is paramount because oftentimes they're going to be sharing things with you and opening up to the listening ear that you are, the non-judgmental listening ear. They're going to be sharing and emoting in ways that they might not even do with their closest loved ones and friends.
Absolutely. And we, our offices are usually the vault of secrets. So it's very, trust is a very important part of that. And actually, trust takes a while to develop. It doesn't just happen in the first session. So trust comes very much from a feeling of safety. And I'm very interested in the vagus nerve, I'm sure. Many people have heard about the vagus nerve. And what it implies is that non-verbally we're picking up from our fellow social world, we're picking up cues for safety. And the body is then told, okay, this is a safe place. And funnily enough, fascinating, Dr. Stephen Porges has purported that the inner ear listens to tones, which are also part of feeling safe. So I think when you read, when you spoke about me, you kind of introduced a lot of answers to this question that my approach, you know, wants very much to be respectful and not to assume the role of an expert. And then that usually I find gives people a big relief to hear, because I'm not there to scold them or tell them what they're doing is wrong. I'm there to share my knowledge, which I've accumulated over the years, but it's only information. It must make sense to them, and so there's no prescription of you should be doing this. And it's interesting to hear people's theory of change when they come into the therapy room. I often ask, how do you think things are going to change? And often they imply I'm the magical wand, which is very complimentary, but actually they've got the magic wand inside of them. And if they can start believing in that, that is just wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if I answered the question. I don't know if I answered your question.
Yeah, you did, absolutely. Let's talk a little about the work that you do, especially with children. Tell us about that.
Yes, well, I do, as you said earlier on, I work with all ages, but my love and meaningful work is with children. I've got a very strong child ego state, and it really likes to play. And when little people are in that state in themselves, then their play is very healing. And so their language becomes play in a flowing way. So they're very engrossed, and they're really enjoying everything we're doing without it being anything like me being a teacher at school or me being a parent that needs to socialize them. It's just their space. And so that's why I love working with them, because they're like little, ducks in the water. They jump in and they love the whole experience. And the pandemic has been so sad, because I had to give up my office and my playroom. And so speaking to little people online is just not the same. So I have been focusing more on adults, and the mental health has deteriorated amongst so many people that, there's a lot of work to be done. And little people are having a hard time, because they don't understand what they've never seen the world before this pandemic. So they don't understand. So I haven't been able to work with children for 18 months.
Yeah, and that's, I'm sure, been a tough thing, because you love it so much. What are some of your most common psychotherapy approaches?
Well, I was an adjunct at St. Louis University, and I taught theories and practice of psychotherapy. And so that's the whole gambit, from Freud right through to postmodernism. And I actually use bits of each of those rich, rich approaches. The dreaded postmodernism word, I know when I say it to students, they kind of, their defensive brains switch off any more availability to learning about it. So I have a little story. I say, people that come into my office are very stuck in one place. There's no hope. They feel as if they've tried and tried and tried and failed. And so the story is very simple. It is a cartoon I saw as a little girl with Tom and Jerry, where little Jerry is running at top speed away from Tom. And in all the series, he seems to escape, but this one you think there's no way he's going to escape. He turns a corner and he's faced with a brick wall. And he looks up and the camera moves backwards and you see this tiny little mouse. And again you think, okay, now it's history. And then he looks left and right and the wall goes on forever and the camera turns and Tom's face is, you know, fills the entire screen and he's got bloodshot eyes and fangs and claws and the audience, you know, gasps. And then little Jerry looks down and he sees a tin of paint. He takes a paintbrush, paints himself a door, the doorknob, and he goes through. And the next scene is you see the other side of the wall and just Tom's nose in the little doorway. And so what that implies is that we feel like we've got this brick wall. But with creativity, there are so many solutions to try. So there are so many doors we can open. And so that's basically what postmodernism means.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And, you know, advancements in neuroscience have also impacted psychology in the Western world. Tell us a little about some of that.
Yes, that's been my fascination for about, I would say about 16 years now. We started being introduced to the brain imaging and how much it's telling us about what's going on in the brain. And so it's actually given us some scientific validity to the things we all know intuitively, whether we're psychologists or not. We know, about how good it is to take a deep breath when we're feeling anxious. And so the neuroscience has been able to put that into a Western scientific paradigm, which gives people a little bit more confidence. Because I do remember early on in my career, if we discussed anything to do with Eastern philosophy or Eastern thought, we were seen as, you know, a little bit strange in the Western world. It wasn't, in inverted commas, scientific. And so I've got a neurofeedback program which I use, and it helps tremendously for people to actually physically see their breathing and their mindfulness working. It's got little monitors on fingers, and it reads the heartbeat and it looks at brain waves. And this helps them believe in themselves and their ability to empower themselves. So they can watch themselves doing the right thing. And when I say right, again, it's in inverted commas. But the mindfulness that's sweeping Western medicine is so, so vital. And psychiatry has given us that.
It really has, and it's a beautiful thing. How have basic axioms and philosophy influenced psychology from your vantage point, Doctor?
Yeah, I feel like I might have gone into that a little bit when I was talking about postmodernism, but psychology is based in philosophy. And so at one stage in my training, I studied a theorist called Piaget. He's got very difficult, very involved and complex work, but he was a prolific writer. And he wrote in the era just after the big IQ test came out. It was the Stanford-Binet test. And he had his own children, And he discovered that qualitatively, children have a different way of making sense of the world. And he used a lot of Immanuel Kant, which I don't recommend anybody tries to read unless they're philosophy majors, because it took me about a year to read the Critique of Pure Reason. I think he was right in the 1800s, and he was very much, I think it was the 1800s, he was very much in the era where he was disguising philosophy that wasn't religious. His work is difficult to understand, but what's wonderful about his work, and you mentioned it when you introduced me, is that he was saying that we are not the source of meaning as humans. So the subject, and I'm paraphrasing him very, very simplistically, he's saying the subject is not the source of meaning, neither is the object. So what we're seeing, like a table, there's no meaning in the table. But when we interact with that, it gives us meaning. So he was sort of saying the meeting place of meaning is in between the subject and the object. And so I've carried the object into social. Piaget didn't write much about the social. And so that philosophy is very much, it helped me tremendously, because I don't only feel children qualitatively make sense of the world differently, but every human being has their own way of being in the world and experiencing the world and having experienced the world. And so that's an important part, to recognize that qualitatively what they may say, I will have to work on to create meaning in between us. I don't know if that makes sense.
The other thing, too, being a lifelong learner is so important. Do you consider yourself a lifelong learner?
Absolutely. I think gaining knowledge is a lifelong endeavor. And the thing about our devices nowadays is that it means that we have access and we can carry information with us wherever we go. It extends the brain, but there's a difference between gaining the knowledge of the world and looking up information. So having taught theories and practice of psychotherapy, the practice part is so important. Because it's saying that something happens or has to happen between reading the information and gaining knowledge. And so I'm a supervisee as well, a supervisor of supervisees. And when I talk to new therapists, I'm saying to them, it's all very well knowing the theories, but going into a room and being faced with an individual, we have to have that knowledge base to be able to put it into practice, and it's got to belong to us. It's a little bit like playing the piano. If you learn the notes and you can read music and you can read the most complex symphonies, that doesn't mean you're going to be able to end up in Carnegie Hall, because there's a tremendous amount of practice in between that. And that's kind of an analogy with gaining knowledge, is it's a lot of self-work. And so I've loved that all my life. I'm very passionate about knowledge and gaining knowledge.
Absolutely, and everybody should really do that. it just enhances your understanding and appreciation of people and the world in general. We have a couple of minutes left here, but why do you feel making judgment on others is destructive to one another? I mean, we're seeing that in society play out as we speak more than ever.
Absolutely. And it's actually not possible, being human, to be totally non-judgmental and value-free. But it is possible to become aware of our own patterns of judging and recognize the strong biases we impose on others by criticizing and blaming. I'm sad we've got so little time, because when you think of judgment, it's a survival tool. A little baby, when they're born, they will not swallow anything bitter, but they will swallow sweet. And so that means we've got an innate ability to judge what is going to be healthy and what isn't going to be healthy. And so it's very important to notice what's right rather than jumping straight into what's wrong, which is the way we have been socialized.
Yes, that's so true, right? Exactly. We have been. It's also important to be self-aware, isn't it?
Yes, very much so. I have to tell you a quick little joke. My dad, I used to watch him. I observed him a lot because I was so interested in mental health. And he would take us for a stroll on a Sunday through the hospital and introduce us to patients. And I would, you know, wonder, what on earth is he doing to help them? These are people who need help. And I really don't see what he's doing. And so I asked him, I said, Daddy, what are you actually doing to help people? I don't think you're doing anything. And he said, you're right, my girl, but don't tell anyone because I'll be out of a job. So I then, of course, became very interested in what am I doing in the therapy room. And it's so simple. All we do as psychotherapists, in my opinion, is that we help people become self-aware so they can become an observing self. And then it gives them the opportunity to see themselves and to pause before they respond. But that is very, very difficult.
So important. We have just about a minute or so left, Doctor. Looking ahead, what are some of the next steps for you in the coming year?
Well, I'm getting pretty old. I should have retired 10 years ago, but I'm loving it so much. But I'm putting myself out there as a consultant so that I can kind of share all the wonderful things that I've learned from the different people I've worked with. And I have put something onto Facebook if anybody wants to learn more about it, and also as a supervisor, which I've done for many years. So I'm seeing myself as still working, but also sharing what I've learned.
That's terrific. Obviously, like you say, you could have retired a while ago, but your passion to help others and to empower and inspire others is so extraordinary. Again, your mission is to create a safe holding environment where an individual can feel connected and sense trust, and that is so essential in life. The website, folks, is katherinemilner.com. That's Catherine with a C, katherinemilner.com. Dr. Milner, thank you very much for joining us. It was an honor and a pleasure to have you here, and hope we get a chance to explore some more, maybe hear some case studies, success stories, things of that nature down the line. But this was a real pleasure, and I thank you for the time.
Thank you, and you made it so easy. I was petrified when we started. Thank you so much, Jim.
Oh, you're very welcome. The pleasure is all mine. You have a wonderful rest of your day, Doctor, and we'll chat again soon, I'm sure. And have a wonderful weekend ahead. CatherineMilner.com is the website. Psychotherapist Dr. Catherine Milner, our special guest on this episode of Close Up Radio. Fascinating conversation. Again, if you'd like to connect with the doctor, CatherineMilner.com is the website. Let her know you heard about it right here on Close Up Radio. This is your host, Jim Masters, thanking you for your time this time. Till next time, we always appreciate you as well. Thanks for joining us. I'll be back in less than 30 minutes with another amazing guest as well from around the world, right here on Close Up Radio. Till then, for all of us, have a terrific day. Be well, and thanks for joining us. Bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.